Hey, it's Melvin, one of your friendly neighborhood podcast hosts. Whether it's your first time tuning in or you're a longtime listener, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. Reviews are the lifeblood of the podcast world, so if you want to help us out, it'll take only a moment of your time. Otherwise, we hope you enjoy the show. Hey, Melanie and I are tired, so we're taking 2 weeks off to do other things with our life, like resting. We'll be back with a new episode August 22nd. Until then, here's a rebroadcast of our episode on Tickled, that borderline true crime documentary on quote-unquote competitive tickling. You're listening to Cinematic Doctrine. Dan, do you want to give some introduction to Tickled while I go refill my coffee and go to the bathroom?
Okay, sure. Sounds like a plan. Tickled is a 2016 New Zealand documentary about, quote, competitive endurance tickling and videos featuring it. However, very quickly, that initial premise is not shredded necessarily, but it continues to develop as the story continues to morph and change, and it becomes less about one specific tickling competition and more about a sort of seedy underbelly that exists, perhaps somewhat in plain view. It is directed by David Ferrier and Dylan Reeve, produced by Carthew Neal. However, it is predominantly a David Ferrier, I'm not sure I'm saying his name correctly, production, as both a response to him is the catalyst of it, and he is kind of the personality that drives the whole documentary forward. It also is interesting in that it's a documentary that, even as you're watching the documentary, the story is developing. There is a quick follow-up as the documentary itself incurred a lot of reaction. And what's partially interesting about the whole experience is that once you do get done watching it, you then have to do your own research to sort of fill in the gaps as to what happens next. Tickled received widespread critical acclaim upon release. It made a lot of people's top 10 best of the year list. It is unique as far as documentaries go in that it touches upon sort of dark internet tales, but outside of the context of like a YouTube channel you might like, is professionally made. It is shocking in sort of a... And weird saying this about something about competitive tickling, but in a kind of understated way, it's sort of plainly disturbing in that what you're seeing is so strange and alien, but it's also disturbing in that the implication about what's going on and what it says about the world we live in today is perhaps more shocking than anything else, as well as the sad, strange figures at the center of all of it. I quite enjoy Tickled. It is a tight 90-minute documentary. I will say that at the ending, you do feel a little unfulfilled. However, there is a follow-up called The Tickle King that you can watch for free online as well, and plus a myriad of articles written about it afterwards. I enjoyed the journey. I was looking for a little more substance. However, the initial shock and strangeness of the documentary itself is more than enough for me to recommend it. Especially if you have HBO Max, this is right on there. You may be familiar with David Ferrier, as he has another show on Netflix called like Dark Documentary. It's like an 8 or 9 episode.
Dark Tourist,
which some of you may be familiar with that. I've seen 1 or 2 episodes of that, and I thought they were pretty good. However, Melvin, you were talking about this documentary to me quite a bit in the lead up.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this YouTuber YMS, Your Movie Sucks. I've been watching him for probably a decade now, a very long time, and his content has only gotten better and better. But years ago, which I guess 2016 when this came out, he did a brief little quickie on Tickled, talking again, yes, it's about competitive endurance tickling. He just sort of doesn't share a whole lot other than it was this extremely engrossing, bizarre movie that is both incredibly funny and incredibly uncomfortable, incredibly emotional at times as you kind of learn like the effects of what's happening, gripping as you're kind of exploring the mystery. Its exploration of the subject matter is very well handled. Like, it's never really outright mocking the concept of tickling. And we'll of course get into the specific, we're giving an overview of our thoughts right now, but we are going to journey through the movie as it progresses, because it's hard to explain the specifics of of it without spoiling really the adventure. It is
a documentary where the strongest thing is the journey of watching it.
Yes. And every 10, 20 minutes, there's like a new revelation. So it keeps pulling you forward. You're never left without some sort of essentially new thing to go, what the heck about, like, to react to. And, but then on top of that, like, it's also fun. Like, it is a really fun documentary. It triggers the true crime part of your brain that wants you to know more and to explore and to understand. It's also just something that, like, it triggers that part of your brain that wants to point and laugh. It's not out yet. We have a Jurassic World episode that's going to be up soon, but there's a section of that where we talk about mockery and how, like, can you mock things? And it's like, yeah, you can. And there's a degree to which it's appropriate and enjoyable. Like, that's part of laughter and fun and situations. I mean, we just spent 40 minutes talking about a crazy guy who runs a huge empire of people who punch and kick each other on stage. So yeah, I think it's okay. And so there's that part of your brain that's laughing at the fact that people are just tickling each other and like the strangeness of it all, especially in one of the special features where the documentarians voluntarily get tickled, which is just outright funny. Yeah, it's very well crafted. Documentaries are usually only as good as their subject matter, and then it's how good they are at explaining and sharing and pacing that information. And like Dan said, the 90 minutes are just really well paced, and by the time you get to the end, you don't even realize it. For me, that wasn't too bad. For me, it kind of worked. It just sort of, you're constantly wondering who is at the center of this. And then finally we get there and it feels great. And there really isn't much more to say. And a good documentary never constantly just points a finger to blame. It also humanizes, and I feel it does that as well. It's good. I know it's going to be challenging, especially for two things. One, because the subject matter is just so weird that I almost feel like some people watching it will just be embarrassed, despite the fact that they're watching it alone based on the recommendation of some podcasters that they tune into every now and then. And two, if you're a Christian, you might feel uncomfortable because the subject matter is so... I don't know. I'm shaking my head right now. I'm trying to figure out a particular word to explain that particular perspective. Let me just put it this way. My sister tuned in to watch it because she knew we were going to talk about it. And I've talked about this documentary for years, and she made it halfway through before she said, this is just getting too weird for me and too uncomfortable.
It is weird. Like, it's very weird.
It's fetishistic. Without it, like, despite the fact that it's clearly fetishistic,
they're very careful to never say that
the particular subject, Jane O'Brien Media, which is where the catalyst starts. David Ferrier finds out a Facebook group called Jane O'Brien Media that is just posting tickling videos. And so David Ferrier messages them, and he immediately gets responses saying, first off, we're not comfortable that a, publicly known homosexual is looking into our project. Two, our project is not homosexual, it is strictly heterosexual. Three, it's not sexual at all. And so, okay, pick a lane.
unfortunately, that is the number one way to make people assume that what you're doing is gay.
Yes.
If you're just like...
Catherine made a joke about like Craigslist listings that are like looking for roommate, not sexual, teehee. Like, okay. Like, you didn't have to say it. Like,
there is almost nothing gayer on earth than someone aggressively telling you that they're not gay.
Yeah.
Like, it's very counterintuitive, but that's definitely how it comes across, which is what's interesting about the movies. There's a lot of stuff that they never say it, but like the implication is there in how everything is framed, but also how people plainly describe themselves and react. This is very prominent in the follow-up video, The Tickle King, where they never say anything. They never imply anything really. Well, it's implied via the language of documentary filmmaking, but like they just let some of the subjects just talk, and by their tone and how they're talking, you can sort of draw conclusions.
Occasionally very Louis Theroux. He is very good at just getting people to like talk, and that's what makes him a really enjoyable documentarian. Some documentaries really want to take the documentarian wants to pull themselves out of the documentary. They just want to let things talk. But by the modus of making a documentary, you are talking. So I think Louis Theroux expertly is like, fine, I'm going to insert myself into it, and I'll just I'll draw things out, and that's what he does. Arguably, Borat is the same thing. It's just with the character. In this particular case, Farrier does that as well. But because it's such a broad story, it doesn't make sense to constantly do like a Louis Theroux situation. Louis Theroux being a documentarian, if you've never watched his stuff, definitely recommend it. He has really good stuff. You may not know this, but the easiest way you can show your support for Cinematic Doctrine is to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So press pause and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And then press play again so you can hear the rest of the show. Yeah, because of the subject matter being so fetishistic and definitely uncomfortable, and I wouldn't say explicit because there's no one naked, but it's definitely clear, I would say. Like, there's no, like, one particular scene in the middle, which is funny. It is totally played for laughs because it's so absurd. It is very clearly something that is only engaged because it makes you feel things. And so I will not hold back. It sure made me feel things, but that's because I was engaged. It's funny. And that's also, we've talked about it plenty of times. That's the joy of movies. It is a fictional experience. Even if it is real, it is still fictional. It's secure. It's safe. Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness can't hurt you. It's so Tickled can't either. But it is, it's going to be challenging for you if you've never watched something that has ever challenged you in your entire life. So if you're the kind of person who thinks Doctor Strange should be rated R, you're probably the kind of person who thinks Tickled should be NC-17. But it is not that bad. It's just awkward. And that's kind of the point. And I think it's okay to feel awkward. Definitely. But yeah, before we get into the specifics of The Journey, I definitely recommend it. It's frankly one of my favorite movies I've ever seen. I have not seen very many movies where I've just watched all the special features. This is one of them where I have. All the special features are great. They're all very small, except for The Tickle King, which is just, you know, a 20-minute short doc about their festival circuit and sort of the resulting effects of the documentary. Arguably, it's just part two, or you could say part 1.5, because it brings a finalization to the general subject matter and the journey of it all.
It feels like the actual third act of the documentary.
It does. It feels more like, yeah, I guess, because for you, you said it feels like it ends abruptly. For me, the third act of the actual documentary feels like the actual third act, but The Tickle King definitely is an addition. It is part of the two, because a documentary has the benefit of being in the real world. And I've often thought to myself, it would be interesting to have a post documentary. Is it The Art of Killing, that documentary from a couple years ago?
That's
like literally recreations of these mobsters and how they killed people. And like, the film is really reflective and hard to watch. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard crazy things about how difficult it can be to watch because it's so raw. But what's interesting would be the follow-up of, okay, this is out there. How does it affect these people moving forward? And that's something kind of wonderful about Tickled and The Tickle King as a unit together. If you buy it on Vudu, you can get both. You said it was free online. Where is it?
I literally
online?
Just Googled The Tickle King and it just came
it's
up
just on YouTube. Okay, so it's just there.
I looked it up and it was supposed to be on Amazon like Prime, but then when I opened up Prime, it just was like not available for some reason. I was like, huh. So I just
then,
like,
yeah, you could watch HBO Max for Tickled and then YouTube for The Tickle King, yeah. I guess. So
it's like, I was Googling to be like, where is it? And it's just like, it immediately came up as the first video option. So I was like, oh, okay. I'm assuming this is okay. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, if Google's strong enough to and powerful enough to do the right thing. So if they're choosing not to, it's not your fault. Criticism of tech companies here. The most minor aside that requires you to have listened to the Patreon stuff, but how is the WWE able to be so powerful as a monopoly and yet everyone's just focused on tech companies? I mean, tech companies are unbelievably powerful and massive, but
because most people don't care about wrestling,
even like, though wrestling is so important and big.
Because most big powerful people, the only change because of public scrutiny, like public pressure to do so, like Actually, last week tonight, I actually just did a video on tech companies. And every time tech companies changed something that was like a questionable policy, it was because of public pressure. And because my theory is because wrestling is so insular, there just doesn't, that public pressure just doesn't exist. Because again, it can operate without really any sort of oversight. Kind of similar to what we're talking about with Tickled. Like this, like extremely shady and allegedly and morally questionable operation that I apparently didn't make a lot of money off of it, but it was massive, but like it existed because everyone involved was too scared to say anything. So it just kept going.
In addition to that, you know? I mean, like even my one of my first write-ups for it on Letterboxd, my first write-up on it was just like, how would you even go about prosecuting or considering stuff like this? Because it is wrong. Morally, you feel that it's wrong. Of course, we'll get into that in a minute. But like, there's certain things in the world that are morally wrong, but you can't figure out quite how in a legal situation to resolve it or go about fixing it or making it better. This is, of course, one of those places where the church could maybe step in and do things because it's a different institution and it can make changes. But if Christians are too uncomfortable to watch Tickled, I don't think they'll be able to make any fixes here. All that will have better perspective when we actually talk about it. So why don't we get into it? So the beginning of the documentary it just throws you right into it, even throwing you right into some of the challenging material, frankly, the most challenging material, which is David Ferrier getting emails that are filled with slurs that they just put on screen. And so David Ferrier is just a New Zealand reporter that the documentary kind of makes clear is pretty popular. He likes to cover weird subject matter out in New Zealand. Props to New Zealand for putting out bangers all the time. We had What We Do in the Shadows. We had Dead Alive. And now we have Tickled. What a great trifecta of filmmaking.
All very similar projects.
Yeah. Far as I'm concerned. Yeah. They're all interestingly strange and fun. Yeah. So he's finding that this Facebook group called Jane O'Brien Media is just putting out videos of competitive endurance tickling. And they show you a video. And it is an 18-year-old muscular boy in shorts, only shorts, tied to a bed, mounted by another young man being tickled under his armpits. And then the video is jump-cutted to two young men tickling his toes. And that is jump-cutted.
I can't see why people would be so uncomfortable with this.
It's right away. And if that doesn't get you interested, not in a sexual fetishistic way, but in I just am waiting for something interesting to watch.
You just like take a sip of your tea, put your monocle on, like, let's see what this is about, this quaint little movie.
I told my coworker about this, and I was like, it is so bizarre, and it doesn't hold back. But if you are the kind of person, if you're like us, podcasters, who talk about movies for a living, as a living, I mean a hobby, and you just
I made a living doing this.
That would be great. I support us on Patreon, please. But you watch so many movies, you're waiting for something bizarre to show up, and this is it. And David Ferrier is here to promise you that it is weird, because as he's showing this really weird situation, he's talking about like, so I send a Facebook message, and immediately I'm getting called out, as stated before. We are Jane O'Brien Media is not comfortable with a outed homosexual communicating with us. We don't feel that that would be good for our brand. We are purely heterosexual. We are non-sexual. But then in addition to this, he is also getting called slurs that are really quite
unprofessional,
very unprofessional. But also like probably the most shocking part of the movie in terms of offensive for me. I think that's just so nasty. So, but for him as a journalist, he goes, oh, okay, so there's a story here. So he investigates further, tries to figure out more. And he's able to, I guess, I don't know. What was your initial experience? We're going to go beat by beat. We'll bounce this back and forth. I introduce a part. I pass it to you to react. And then you introduce a part and then I'll react. So from the start, I mean, I've told you about this movie, but how did you react to this first 5 minutes of this movie?
Well, first we see footage from talking to Justin Bieber, which
that's right, yeah, because he's so popular, yeah.
Then I was like,
it's actually footage of Justin Bieber talking to David Ferrier. I just want to make that clear. Not,
I mean, most conversations involve two people talking. So I feel like we were both correct. Then I was trying to place David Ferrier because I was like, I feel like I've seen this guy somewhere. And then I realized that he'd been on the Netflix show. But then there is a sequence where, and it was watched a lot of documentaries that specifically are about things that originate on the internet. This original beat is pretty familiar, where someone stumbles across something weird online, and then they try to do their journalistic due diligence and contact the person. And often this is where things go awry, either because they just don't respond or whatever. And my first thought was like, wow, that was probably the worst thing they could have done.
Yes.
Because if they had just not responded,
right,
or they had given him a very formed letter, this documentary might not exist.
He'd move on to his next story, yeah, because he's got deadlines and he's got him. Yeah, so he would have just been gone.
And it's important narratively because it really sets the bedrock of one of the understated themes of the doc, which is why? Why is this person doing this? But also, why are they so defensive about it? And a running thread is like, what is this person getting out of making these videos and doing this? And then it becomes sort of plainly clear that the videos are part of it, but the larger component is what it causes the people participating. And the fact this person is so aggressively defensive about this not being the sexual thing, like, oh, this is just whatever, really is an initial like hook for David Ferrier, where being who he is, he can tell a good story when it jumps out at him. And so my initial response is just like, ugh, shouldn't have done that. Yeah. I've seen this documentary, like,
that's
this
right,
format,
right,
before.
Yeah.
And I know that this is just going to like entice him even further. To me, the real initial, like, what the heck is going on is the next scene where the lawyers show up, they get very defensive and aggressive about the fact that Ferrier is filming them. And then they get very threatening, like, you don't even know what's going on. Like, you don't know what's going to happen to you. And like, blah, blah, like, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And it just like the thing of dangling above you as a viewer is like, we're still talking about tickling videos, right? Like, this is not, this is a pretty mundane, normalish, old normal in the sense that like, doesn't look illegal or anything.
Yeah, it's definitely uncomfortable. And
but it's not
like,
illegal. Like,
right.
You know, he didn't find like snuff films or like government secrets or something. This is just someone's weird hobby in theory. So why are the people involved so defensive and shadowy about it? And that like intrigue, I think,
continues to draw you in first off,
like,
as an audience member.
Because I've seen quite a few documentaries, but like so many documentaries, I think they rely kind of on the subject itself being like, in and of itself, like, engaging and interesting. And a really great documentary is they give you some sort of hook. Like, okay, like, there's a narrative element that's going to keep drag you along. I think Tickle does a great job of that. Because very quickly, the story becomes something other than what the stated story is. So,
enjoying this episode? Grab that share link and tell your friends. Word of mouth is the most effective way for a podcast to reach new listeners. So don't be shy. Share the episode wherever you can.
Like, I guess, where does the documentary really take off for you? Like, where do you really, like, get hooked into the story? Or was it, like, right away?
I think it was right away. I mean, even just hearing it was about this weird expanding story about tickling. First off, it was a YMS recommendation, so that's a positive for me. That makes me want to check it out. But just the subject matter is interesting to me. I, you know, talking about what I said even earlier with the WWE, but acting and ego and stuff like that, like just this idea of losing yourself to do something is fascinating to me, and exploring that is interesting. And so the idea of even people who would do these, so like you learn a little bit further about why someone would be in one of these videos, and it's the one person they interview says like, well, I just was like, I was like an 18-year-old teenager. I just needed some money. I saw this ad that was just like, hey, we'll give you $1,500, $2,000 to do competitive tickling. You come on, we just ask you a couple questions about like, basically like, are you ticklish and how would, what's your experience with it? And then it's, you get tickled for this amount of time and then that's it. And in terms of the physical experience of it, it's just like, you can understand, like, I guess the draw to it, because it's just like you're trying to resist your bodily reaction to the stimulation of it. And if you've ever, I'll do my interview. I am extremely ticklish to the point that if someone tries, I get away. Like it
don't
is.
Don't want to put that out there.
my wife will try and do it, and I'm like, no way, I'm out of here. And yet, like even watching it, I'm like, $2,000 though. Like I might do it. So like it immediately is fascinating, and it's already engaging that part of your brain too that makes you go, would I do that? Like when you watch something like a competition show or anything like that. But of course, in this particular case and this particular subject matter of Jane O'Brien Media, you of course are knowing like, there's something a little more to this. And I mean, even just like from the emails that he gets back being so vile and just so nasty and being, we joke about being unprofessional, but unprofessional, that immediately gives you red flags of like, there's something more going on. Because if it was just normal, which later on in the documentary, I don't know if you call it normal, but they interview someone who's more professional about their tickling engagement stuff. It's just immediately, yeah, catches my attention. And I just want to know more. Plus 90 minutes. Okay. Yeah, that's easy. So if it ends up being disappointing, it was 90 minutes. I can move on with my life. And it was not disappointing at all. But yeah, so it catches me right away. But I think for the more normal audience, it's when the lawyers show up and the way they react. I mean, they're talking comfortably, normally, totally chill, and then the one notices they're being, or the one calls out.
This is about respect.
Filmed.
This is about respect.
Yeah, and it's just very bizarre, extremely bizarre. And then that's when you're like, all right, I got to know more. So. Of course, the documentary continues. They talk a little bit more with the lawyers in New Zealand, and there's just more interesting stuff that they mention. Like they're not, there's one interview, there's one section where they aren't being filmed, but they have microphones. And so you get to pick up their conversation at a conference room, and it just gives you more stuff where like the one guy is really, really laying on the not gays about the whole situation. And you're just like, what is going on? Cause like, It's like you said, it's the more you defend about not being gay, the more people go, okay. Even that gets you to go like, but I just want to know, like, why are you trying to defend so much? So anyways, they end up flying, the lawyers fly back to the US. And then of course the documentary team flies out to the US as well. And they allude that they believe they actually were able to ascertain the next location of where this tickling ring is going to take place. Some details that we didn't share, which allude to the more strangeness of it, is that if you are pitched to be in the tickling competition, your ticket to fly to Los Angeles will be paid for. Four nights in a nice hotel room will be paid for. And then you will be paid and compensated for the endurance tickling competition, which they never explain what the rules are, by the way. I was explaining it to my boss because I was like, this documentary is insane. And he goes, how do you lose? I'm like, I don't know.
How do you win?
I don't know how you like.
Because it's like,
what's the
laugh immediately? So like, is it per Haas? Like, what is?
Do you have a safe word where you're just like, I'm done? Like, I don't know. Like, it's bizarre.
Are there judges? Like, what is?
Yeah.
It? Like that's the thing. Like,
what's the competition?
They do that first interview with somebody, and then it's like, I get that everyone did it because they're like struggling actors or athletes or whatever, and they needed money.
Right. Like, he mentions like, I've seen actors that are in commercials do this. Like this.
Yeah.
It's really
so
strange.
Immediately sketchy because you just get ticked. Like there's no competition aspect of it. So they'd be like, okay, this is weird. I'm not going to, you know, judge anyone who just was like, who cares? I'll get tickled on screen. Cause the pitch doesn't seem that bad, especially when, like part of the morally gray area is that everyone who gets interviewed and everyone involved mentions that they were told this is like an audition tape or this was like wouldn't get put anywhere. It's just
right.
for a private collection. So like I'll get tickled for $1,000.
Let's defend these subject matters. Okay. So like you are living in LA and you know there's game shows and we all watch them or have watched them. The last one I watched was Killer Camp for the podcast. I still stand that one. Everyone should check it out because it's just a lot of fun. It's a slasher themed competition game where one of them is the killer. It's like Among Us, but in real life. And so they're fun, right? Like you do these weird assortments of games, you win prizes. That's pretty cool. Of course, taxes will nail you. So like you're going to lose a lot of that money, but still. And so like, okay, you see this listing for that. you hear it's an audition tape. That sounds kind of fun. Like, okay, I'll go ahead and do that. Like, whatever. Well, but if you want to get into the interview,
part of what makes this documentary work is that the basic premise of these videos is so obviously on its face not a competition for athletic sport purposes. It is clearly for someone else's unspecific desires. Like, it's so obviously something nefarious underneath it that, like, that would immediately turn me off to, like, I don't care, $10,000, I'm not doing it, you know?
Right, right. Not with Jane O'Brien.
not with this company, maybe someone else. Maybe that other guy they interviewed.
I need ethically sourced tickling videos.
Yeah, I want my farm-to-table tickling videos. Yeah, and that's kind of, like, part of what makes the documentary work, is it's so immediately, like, red flag, something's weird here. And that normal curiosity makes you want to find it out. I guess, like, so, Melvin, how much would they have to pay you to do one of these videos?
Not for Jane O'Brien. I would not do it. I will say that.
I do it for myself, for pride.
Okay. So just to jump ahead a little
emotion,
bit.
I wasn't making any other reference.
Bazinga. To jump ahead into the documentary, and it's not uncommon for documentaries to do this, where they have a subject matter that is questionable, and then they go to an adjacent subject matter that is basically the same, but the moral positive equivalent. And you could debate whether this is a moral positive, but they end up visiting a genuine outright fetishist of tickling. Like, and whether or not they never explore if the videos are including nudity or not, but in this documentary, the guy's not naked, but definitely muscular, good looking guy with his shirt off being tickled and tied down. And in that section, I'm like, you know what? I think I would do it. I am fascinated with the whole. I would totally if someone's converting it into some sort of sexual pleasure thing, then I would not do it. And I know that they are pretty clear that that's part of the point here. But in terms of, like, you go to a carnival strongman type test, except it's tickling instead, I think it'd be kind of interesting. And one of the special features, David Ferrier, Dylan Reeve, and I believe that's Dylan O'Brien, or I can't remember. I'm so sorry. You were literally
actor Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien, yeah. You were literally the second half of the documentarians here. But all of them, including the boom mic and the cinematographer guy, all participate in it. And it's quite funny because at one point he's tickling and the one guy just stops laughing. It's like his body just stops. It's not funny anymore. And he's not mad or anything. He's just like, it's not getting me anymore. Like, that all seems interesting to me. And the loss of ego, the test of your person, like the comfortability in your own skin and and frankly, for men, your masculinity to just be like, yeah, I'll get tickled. It doesn't change the fact that I'm who I am. I would totally do that. That's a total test of that. And I think that would be interesting. So to answer your question, at this point, am I just saying outright, I wouldn't even do it for money. I would just do it.
I just try new things.
So, yeah,
you can't
fine.
Put a price on experience.
It's just like the one guy says, it's like, oh, I just like to try new things. And I wouldn't want to say I didn't do it just because I tried it. Like, that's literally
that
my mentality
thing
here.
Where people are always like, well, if I say no the rest of my life, I'll wonder. This is not one of those things for me. Like, for me, it's obviously like, that's weird. Like, I'm not doing that.
One of my hobbies is writing. I do enjoy doing that. And part of what's enjoyable about writing is experiencing stuff. And you don't always have to experience something to be able to write about it. Insert crime novelist here. But, like, I do think it would be interesting to experience, like, okay, you're going 15 minutes getting tickled. Survive.
15 like, minutes? Are you insane?
That's what they do. That's what they said they do. Like, 15, 20 minutes
of it.
That's
what they're doing. I'm giving you a totally, like, this is an imagined situation. You can set whatever parameters you want. You're like, yeah, good 15 minutes. Like,
I think my cardio and endurance could do it. I would be sore afterward because when you're tickled, it's your full body like tightening up, and I would do it. Just to put it in perspective, they have a
just
foot
to feel
clamp
something.
Just to be finally, I can feel something since 2020. Just to put it in perspective, there is a foot clamp that puts your feet down, but also on the foot clamp are shoelaces, and you go, what are those for? The shoelaces are to hold your big toe back so you can't curl your toes when you're being tickled on your foot. That is how serious this gets. And yeah, you know, I'd give it a try. Why not? That'd be kind of funny. Check it out. Next year, there will be a Patreon exclusive video of Melvin Benson being tickled.
That's when I leave. That's when you go back to a solo show. Put out a statement on Twitter. Like, I do not endorse the depravity.
The SBC does not endorse Cinematic Doctrine's tickling video. We believe this is heinous or whatever. It's like, come on, guys. It's all in good fun.
Is it?
Does that answer your question? I think. I mean, I don't add a price tag to it. Can you put a price on Patreon supporters?
I was looking for some funny banter, and then you got like really serious.
Can you put a price on Patreon support and the exclusive content available to those Patreon supporters?
Half this episode is going on Patreon. Just like, I can't release that to the public.
I'm confident in myself. I don't mind.
I would never.
You would never tickle for no matter how much money.
No, you can't put a price.
Is that
on
your Vecna
it.
Experience? He transports you to a tickling room, and you got to play your favorite song.
I mean,
it's
not like my deepest, darkest fear or anything. It seems like a pretty mild experience overall. Like not pleasant, but it's not like the worst thing. Which is the guy talks about too. It's just like it's like it's not like a weird. It is like he's like it's almost like a sanitized version of bondage or something. Where it's like some of the same like psychological things, but it's not like intense or whatever.
Because the second it stops, it stops. It's just like, oh, okay, whatever. And that's it. Okay.
Yeah. But it's like at the same time, like just like something I would enjoy. And like the fact that like other people would derive enjoyment from my non-enjoyment, it's just something I don't like in general, I guess, like as a thing. I don't know. There's something weird about it to me.
Correct. Yeah. Like that's why I preface by saying I wouldn't enjoy the idea of someone doing it sexually, but guess what? People can wear full clothes and other people are trying to get sexual pleasure out of it. So
sure. I think the, one of the core questions of the doc though, is it's like, is there a like non-sexual, like healthy ish, like what other enjoyment is there to be derived from this thing that in and of itself, like it's innocent. Children do this. Like it is, like, there's nothing inherently like, weird or perverse or anything about it, like, on principle. But it's also extremely difficult to think of any sort of situation where someone would be consuming some material. Like, for what? Like, the art of it? Like, because, like, I guess in theory, if you were able to put together an actual competitive, like, circuit or something where there was a point system or... It basically was like submission wrestling where like if someone laughed, they got eliminated. I guess you could maybe do that. Like I could see like it being like a weird college like sport thing, like instead of flag football or whatever. But like it's hard to imagine a scenario where anyone's consuming this material for totally pure, wholesome reasons.
See, I don't think that way. I think in the subject matter of the documentary, it's of course embracing that because that's also the angle that David Ferrier is going with the documentary and exploring that idea. I do think just like for me,
I know that's not the angle of the documentary. I'm just saying like,
correct. Yeah. Yeah. I think you could in theory, see it as a competition thing in the sense of like silly TV shows where they're reality shows, competitions, stuff like that. But like I said, my case was more just like I would personally do it as a test or like an experiential thing, which I think I made pretty clear at the beginning. And then as a podcaster and entertainer, had fun exploring the different angles of what that says about my personality. And so, but before, like I said, this is the episode where we lose listeners.
I don't think these videos though, like that are pictured in the,
oh, 100%. That's part of the draw of the true crime aspect is like, okay. Why is he right off the get-go expressing the not gays and trying to assert that these aren't sexual? Because obviously the guy is, if it's not that, it's this bizarre power trip idea of the collection of the videos and manipulation of people. Hey there, listener. Want to influence the podcast? Head on over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine and support the show for $3 a month. In doing so, you'll be able to vote on a movie poll that picks a film we discuss each month. So jump on over there and have your voice heard. Which gets into why probably the first real sad part of the documentary, which is as they discuss with one of the an old subject matter of the documentary, a person who had taken the job to do the competitive tickling. He shares his story, and he shares that, like, he did this, got the money, left, and then someone found a YouTube video of him. And unfortunately, when they introduce themselves on the video, they are saying their full, basically first and last name. They explain whether they're ticklish or not, and then there's the competition of them being tickled. And in this particular case, someone finds the video, it gets shared online, he's still in school, and it starts to affect him. So he takes a YouTube claim to take it down, YouTube takes it down, and Jane O'Brien Media, I think, starts emailing him saying, like, you're going to regret that, and starts posting the video very explicitly with his name, with inflammatory titles like such and such likes getting tickled and is very tickle friendly and wants to promote tickling on every video site you can imagine. So Google searching for him when he wants to go to college or join football teams, it's the first thing that comes up. And he starts sharing how it is literally preventing him from getting jobs. It is preventing him from getting into football teams. He's talking about how he is has trained his whole life for the particular position he's in. And often coaches tell him he's one of the best players on the team and is the best in that position, but they can't let him join because of the publicity that would be, you know, affect the team because of it. And so they go with players who are not as good as him. And so he starts getting depression and stuff like that, that is just really affecting his life. And that's when I think is the third draw of the movie, if the other two didn't get you. And that is the justice attraction of the documentary, which is a part of true crime. And you want justice for how this has affected people, apart from it just being strange. And I could say, I guess you could say, an affront to your moral senses to watch people get tickled and go, that feels weird. And how did you react to this? Is this sort of what you kind of expected from this subject matter, that at some point we're going to see how this negatively affects people?
Yeah, I mean, that to me was seemed like the angle that kind of inevitably, because I was having trouble picturing, because like a documentary like this can go in, I don't want to say it only can go in one of two directions, but at least from my experience and other similar-ish documentaries I've seen, like it goes either a very whimsical direction where it turns out there's just this weird, wacky world, and
yes,
who are we to judge or whatever, or it goes in a nefarious direction where the people involved are negatively affected. I wasn't surprised. What I was surprised by was the pointed aggressiveness of it, where the person involved was specifically seeking out like where these people worked and like figured out where they were playing football and stuff, and was like targeting them, and purely because the person didn't want the video out there. And like two specific things is that first, who they were posting the video everywhere they possibly could. They're going Daily Motion, Vimeo, like Blip, I'm assuming when Blip was around. They were setting up entire websites just about them.
A website and domain name in their name.
With all their personal information. Like, here's their phone number, here's their fax. Like, that was weird. And that was where, for me, that begins also putting together the thing of like, okay, this person isn't in it just for the videos. Like, they clearly are trying to exert control over other people. And that, which was kind of interesting, because then it shifts from being about this wider world and begins to focus in on a single individual. Who is the person? Who is the ringleader here? Who is
Jane O'Brien?
Who is Jane O'Brien? Not Dylan O'Brien, the actor. Who is Jane O'Brien? It'd been crazy if it was Dylan O'Brien, though. Now that's a documentary.
They just out someone, some really big guy. Yeah, that'd be crazy.
And that becomes a draw. Where you do want justice. You want to see, like, I hope this person gets their comeuppance in the end. And then, like, as they continue to interview people, they interview an old associate who helps this other person, because as they're just trying to like figure out the whole tickling world, so to speak. They connect with people who are OGs, who are back in the ground floor of this stuff.
Yeah, this is when I think they talk to the guy who makes the ethically sourced tickling videos, quote unquote.
And then they move on to this other guy who is...
He talks about, there's Jane O'Brien, who we've been following so far, who's the mystery of Jane O'Brien. And then the fetishist says he remembers being online in the 90s, and there was someone named Terry DeSisto who kept asking for videos, trying to figure stuff out. And I think that's when we meet a
old, it was like a casting director, right? Who worked for Terry
casting director and worked in other kind of other industries.
And that's where we kind of get to the point where, yes, this obviously is a documentary covering taboo subject material. The casting director used to work on adult films and participated in them. And so that's, I think, the documentary.
There was other stuff too. Like, I feel like this person was kind of like a jack of all trades, like did all kinds of different entertainment stuff.
100%. I think thinking of our Christian audience who tunes in for top quality Christian material, a lot of the subject matter in the documentary can be pretty challenging. But I think if you're someone who's comfortable with, I guess you would say, history and understanding, knowledge, and also reality, like this stuff doesn't come as a total surprise getting into the specifics. But they start having the casting director shares his experience with this other individual, Terry DeSisto. If you wanted to get into that, I know you were sort of heading that direction, and then I cut you off.
But. Yeah, well, this is kind of where I think the engine really starts going on this whole mystery, as they start connecting these dots. And there's this other person who, as they're describing them, hey, this person sounds really familiar. They initially wanted videos, and they would get very aggressive and weird if people said no to them or wanted out of the industry. And hey, doesn't this person sound very familiar to someone else we've been interacting with? And it begins like really putting together. I don't want to get too much detail here, because I just do think that like the actual, like, this is where I was really getting engaged, because you're getting into like the mystery at the core of the movie starts to come together. And like, I found like, cause then they talk to other journalists who've been covering the story for decades.
Yeah. Like, it's like, it turns out that this has been going on forever, kind of thing.
Like, they actually do. And spoilers, if you're still listening, they do uncover who this original person is. And they're some guy named,
David D'Amato.
What's
David
his first
D'Amato.
Name?
David D'Amato.
It's D'Amato. Yeah, David D'Amato, who was like a school principal and like all of this like weird stuff, like the exact opposite type of job you hope this type of person has. It's a man. It's not a lady. And there's like, and all of this, like these details come to the forefront. And this is where we start putting together almost like a profile of who this person is at the center. And this is, to me, the good stuff. This is the really juicy, interesting information.
Right. The flavor is the tickling, but the meat is this.
Tickler.
This is the sub. Yeah, the tickler. Yeah.
And yeah, you start learning things about this person, how they're connected to law people. His father owned like a law firm.
How,
like,
they never stopped asking for videos. Do you remember this particular part?
Yes, because they were pretending to be sick.
So he's, Terry DeSisto is working with this casting director, and the casting director has like a training. They cover how he figured out who to have in these tickling videos and how not to. Probably the most, this is where like it becomes, it may not be snuff films, but it feels like that, because it's just, here's old film reels of my casting, and it's just like his living room. It feels the most weird.
It's very lo-fi.
It's so lo-fi. It is the stuff you live for in movies, where you get to the weird, uncomfortable stuff that you never seen before. Oh, you've only seen Marvel movies. Let me show you a real movie. And it just, sit your friend down and show them this. And it's just, they basically, a part of them dies because they've just never seen something so strange before. And he starts to talk about how, at one point, he starts getting letters, not emails, and they're letters saying, hey, I got mono. It's just hard for me to move around, but I'm writing these to you. Terry DeSisto is still giving specifics on how to get, like, what they're looking for and this and that, whatever. And then the worst part is, at some point, the videos start showing up online, which for this casting director, he's very uncomfortable with that, says that's not okay. You cannot be putting these videos online, because there's contracts with the talent, and the talent did not expect this to be the case. And when the casting director says, like, that's not okay, he starts getting railed and he starts getting hate mail, and they get very nasty. Well, there's some specifics of which we'll leave to just the experiencing in the movie, but it's impressive almost how evil and nasty these things get. And you thought it couldn't get worse than the tickling videos, but it really is just horrible stuff. And, but at some point, when they put all the stuff together, you learn that David D'Amato had actually gone to jail, and the letters were letters he was writing in jail to the casting director so that he could continue to have these videos produced while he is technically completely incapable of watching them. It is just bizarre. And like you said, your focus shifts from the fascination of the tickling to this really determined pathology and evil of this figure, David D'Amato, because it is evil. Like it, the degree of which he's in power and using that power, and just it is why you put on a true crime. Like, even though it's disgusting to just sort of sit back and ogle like the imagery and evil and pathology of these figures, it's also what draws you into it because you're so fascinated by why. Like, why is he in jail writing letters to this casting director to get more tickling videos that he can't watch? What, so when he gets out, he just has like a plethora of extra videos to check out? Like, that's just strange. That's like if I was away, but I kept writing letters to like Red Letter Media saying, hey guys, I don't have your YouTube right now, but are you going to talk about the Batman yet? I'm really excited. Please have that up before I get back. It's like, dude, who cares? Like, focus on the fact that you're doing something else. It's just strange. But did you want to kind of get into more beyond, I guess beyond the journalists, because they communicate with a couple others and basically blow their minds?
I mean, once they pinpoint who this person is, like that's D'Amato, it sort of shifts the entire doc from just like, let's try and figure out what this tickling thing's about to like borderline a manhunt to try and find this one person. They do also investigate. And this was the weirdest thing to me in the doc, where they go and there's D'Amato's trying to break into the MMA world, apparently.
Yeah, that was I was like, this will get points for Dan.
It did get points for me. I like the guy. I was like, man, if someone tried to tickle me in a fight, you're getting punched in the face after.
Yeah, because like, there's no rules against tickling, and tickling is what causes like, voluntary reactions. Yeah. So you could tickle to get out of your grab, but it's like, come on, no one's gonna tickle you out to like, get a grab. Like,
it is a great example of somebody who wants to be involved in something, can't, understands it not at all. Like,
yes, right,
there's no rules, then you can't tickle, so maybe you should. It's just
tickling,
like,
should be totally viable in combat. Like,
it won't, it's not.
Yeah.
But the idea that there's all of these, like, across the United States, there's all these, they call them like cells, where he's trying to get, like, again, trying to get these MMA fighters or amateur fighters to try and, like, quote unquote, figure out the viability of tickling in combat.
And he's finding extremely poverty stricken locations because he can take advantage of the fact that these people are in need of money. So they'll do these videos.
Which, again, even if it's not illegal, morally, very questionable.
Yes. Yes.
And that's like, and they get some good interviews with this guy, and he's just like talking about like, oh, he's recruiting me. And again, the underlying thing is people are also afraid of this D'Amato guy. Like, even if they don't know that's D'Amato, they're afraid of this woman that they're answering to, where like, this is the only guy who's willing to talk on camera. Their initial interview with that athlete, it's the only guy that he get to talk on camera. No one else wants to like be ID'd or be seen defying this person. Cause if you do, you get letters sent to you, you get fired from jobs, you get doxxed. Like, this one original associate, she was sending, well, D'Amato is sending letters to his mother, making fun of her dead son. Like,
yes,
like just awful, awful stuff. But the real shift is that they're trying to track down D'Amato. And so they try and contact, I think, someone at the building he lives in. They're like, yeah, I can't tell you who it is. And they start calling up his colleagues and people associated with him. And across the board, everyone will say either, I have not seen D'Amato in years, but you should stay away from him.
Yes.
Or they will just say, you should stay away from him. Like, everyone is afraid of this person, which is very odd, given that it's the tycoon of a tickling video empire who is commanding fear like a mob boss.
Been itching for Cinematic Doctrine merch? Check out the support tiers on Patreon. We're offering merch to those who support at select tiers. So head on over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine and share your support. There's a link in the show notes, too.
And then, like, it all kind of hits this culminating moment where they actually do get D'Amato on camera. It's like, it's this interestingly kind of like low key.
It's mundane. It's
he's simple. Just at Starbucks.
I know. It's basically an ad for Starbucks and how nobody can resist once you've started to go. You got to get your drink. Just got to go.
Tired from coercing terabytes of videos out of somebody. Pick yourself up.
That's right.
Get an espresso shot. And then like the ending of it, and it sounds like we've covered a lot of ground, but it is only 90 minutes. But the ending is they find his mother-in-law, and like it's the big kind of big final like note that the whole thing ends on, where she just gives this very candid
profile of him.
Profile is a good word for it, of D'Amato. And it really ties everything together, where it's this like sad, lonely person who
really sad,
yeah. Very, very sad, questionable sexuality and personality, and was lonely, bullied, overly sheltered. And now that they've become this powerful person who isn't just in control, but they can coerce and get whatever they want out of people.
Right.
And it's a nice moment. And it feels like, for me, it felt like it was the final moment before some sort of like end. But for the documentary, it is kind of how it ends, before they get into the sequel-ish video. But it's a really satisfying journey. I think if I had known that it ends the way it did, it would have even been more enjoyable, because it keeps building and building. And like you said, like every 10 to 15 minutes, there is a new revelation that completely
really
recontextualizes everything you've seen so far. It keeps building and it keeps introducing more people, and all these people give even more details, and they just keep building the mystique of this one person who has stolen identities, who has bought the social security numbers of dead women to continue to go on the charade, who has opened up hundreds of websites, who has ruined the lives of thousands of people. And he keeps building and building and building. And it's just some guy at Starbucks who had a very sad childhood.
Yeah.
It just keeps hitting this. It just keeps climaxing. And when it hits this crescendo, finally, it's this extremely low key moment, which is really effective and good. But I think, like you said, you've invested in wanting justice for all these people who've been wrong, you're waiting for some scene where police show up and arrest them, which just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It never happens, really. So, but do you want to give any sort of final thoughts before we talk about the follow-up 22-minute doc, The Tickle King?
Yeah, so I watched all the special features. I had not seen The Tickle King yet. I didn't know about it, but I didn't check it out until this time going through the movie. And I'll just brief aside for all three of the special features. One of them is an additional little interview with when they go visit the ethically sourced tickle video guy. The guy being tickled, they interview him just to sort of ask about like why he did it and like his experience with it. And it's just interesting. It's only like 3 minutes, so it's kind of worth tuning into. Then there's one where it's all of the guy's documentarians being tickled, which is pretty funny. Fun for the full family. It's very funny. And then of course there's this, Tickle King, and the Tickle King is a 20-minute short doc that is essentially when the film was coming out and was going on the festival circuit, they were, still getting, contacted and somewhat harassed by David D'Amato and his team of lawyers.
Which is crazy, 'cause like the whole first doc, D'Amato is this figure shrouded in mystery. They can't find him. There's no photos of him even really. Like there's one like mugshot. And then in The Tickle King, he's just there. He's just there yelling at them. It is wild.
Yeah. They do this festival circuit. When they go to Sundance, they have a couple screens, but then there's during, I think their first or second screen, one of the people in the audience goes to Ferrier and is just like, hey, there was this guy next to me just flipping papers constantly and taking notes throughout the movie. And I looked over and it was a lot of paper. So I don't know if it's legal and whatever. So then they're like, okay, it sounds like David D'Amato's having people in our area. And then they have another screening and somebody goes to Ferrier as the screen is going on and says, there's a man with a coffee cup that he keeps holding to his mouth the entire time. And they go, we did a coffee cup stunt where we put a camera in a coffee cup as I did a conversation with someone. So they had to literally pause the movie in the middle of the movie, had the two men come out and they saw them, and they later learned that they were private eyes. And when they revealed that there was nothing in the coffee cup, they suspected that perhaps they had a camera in the coffee cup, slipped it to a woman that was sitting next to them who now was not there. And so they're still getting harassed and affected by this. And then finally, when the movie is out of its, at Sundance, they upped the security like crazy, which is crazy to think about. And then finally, they are going to do a public release of the film out of the festival circuit. And so the two of them split up. Farrier goes to the East Coast and Dylan goes to the West Coast. And when Dylan is in the West Coast, who's there other than just David D'Amato? He's just at the screen. And as the film comes to the end and they're going to do the Q&A and Dylan is going to the stage, D'Amato just stands up and starts talking to him and is pretty heated. And they start kind of going back and forth and D'Amato's saying how like it's demonstrably false, none of it's true. And they're going into each other and Dylan's really chill about it. And at some point D'Amato's going to leave and people start booing him and everything. And Dylan's like, hey, chill out. Like, it's not cool. And he's like, for the Q&A, we'd love for you to stay. So D'Amato just says, I'm going to stay. And it's kind of cute because he's just this big man sitting down eating popcorn. Just, again, mundane. It's like you would – it. First off, that's what's so strange, right? It's like people – just a random stranger. It's the ending of Hellfest where the killer goes home, puts his mask in the shed, and he's just a normal guy who just has a family. And who would have thought anyone other than us would still be talking about Hellfest? But there's just Q&A where they talk about it. And then at some point, D'Amato starts asking questions. But even more strangely, one of the lawyers starts asking questions, who, again, is just so worried about the fact that they believe that the film paints what they're doing as very homosexual. And the documentarian says, I don't think so. I think we just presented it very strangely. Frankly, culturally, by just having several muscular, topless men tickling each other, it looks homosexual. So I don't know. I think you just got to accept
Look,
it.
And I am a professional wrestling fan. Okay. I understand that, like, just the presence of people in various levels of undress, like being physical, is not inherently sexual anyway.
Correct.
These videos.
I know. It's clearly. Well, it's the conundrum, right? There's like a TikTok I saw, and it was two girls sitting in a room together. Oh, they're just good friends. And then two girls hugging. Oh, they're just friends. And then it was two girls kissing. Oh, they're just friends. And then it was two boys sitting 6 feet across. Oh, they're gay. It's just like, for some reason, there's a thing about two men being closer that always like that's why there's the classic Christian hug of two men hugging and they pat each other's back and it's three taps. So it's, I'm not gay. That's kind of the joke, right? Like, for some reason, men cannot be physically close in a Western setting. Meanwhile, my one friend who lives in South Korea says like boys and men are very touchy.
Yeah.
And it's just culturally very different and not considered homosexual. So here in the West, if you're going to have these tickly videos, you just stop defending it. Just accept this is what it looks like and just advocate for your tickling if you really think it's a real operation, which it's not a legitimate operation.
Every missionary I know has stories of going to other cultures and like, oh, like the guys there just hold hands, you know, or whatever. And it's just, it is pretty uniquely Western in that way where there's like, they're kind of closed off to any sort of like affection.
And then you'll find like on men's right activist websites, articles about how men need more physical touch. And it's just the most bizarre, contrary kind of thing, which arguably everyone needs more physical touch. Non-sexual, positive physical touch is very good.
Yes.
Very good.
There is.
It's not really culturally normal, or I don't know how to argue for it because it's just typically not normal. I don't know. But
yeah, all that to say, like, yes, there is a level where we hear maybe we're a little uptight about physical affection that can be very healthy and even in godly, you know, there's something very good and pure about like you're having a bad day and your friend hugs you, or just being comfortable enough with somebody that you can like show like different levels of affection towards one another. That's very good and healthy. However, there is something to be said about presentation. And everything about the way that these videos are made, marketed, presented, and distributed is so clearly sketchy that it cancels out any defenses that you can make about like their content and intention, which is then magnified by the fact that like there is a part in this follow-up documentary where the lawyer from the first one is interviewing the MMA guy from the first one. And he's like trying to coerce him into these answers about like, oh, this is all lies, this is all sketchy. And the guy being interviewed, again, there's nothing said, but like the way that the MMA guy is answering these questions, he clearly looks like he's under some sort of duress where like he doesn't fully believe that. And then, of course, there's this final interview where the film's producer is talking to D'Amato, and D'Amato is very, very not just insistent, like he's questioning why this guy would even want to be associated with somebody who's known to be...
You're talking about outside of the theater?
Yeah. When they go outside the theater. Why would you even want to talk to him? And it's
he's like, you're a married man with kids. Why would you want to be friends with David if he's gay? It's essentially what he says. And he just, and then he kind of just goes,
it's like verbatim what he says.
And it's really like, it's shocking. Because
and how Frank just blunt, and how he thinks he's being very normal in saying this.
Yeah, and he like his expressions are so casually like, okay, whatever, like tomato, tomato.
New Zealanders.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because like for two reasons, right? Like one is culturally now it's just like sexuality is such a mess right now that it's just okay, whatever. And then secondly, it's just so he's so confident in expressing these really nasty things. Because at the end of the day, it's just like, he's different than you. Why would you have a relationship with him? Which is just a really
he's not normal like me, the tickle king.
Yeah, it's like, just really weird. It's and it asserts just how like twisted and like evil that perspective is, because it's so.
Yeah,
it's very dehumanizing. I can imagine like Ferry is probably used to strange things, but that was probably such a like painful thing to even hear, right? To just be like,
maybe because I wonder if the source is so strange that it's like very easy to dismiss.
It's almost obvious. Like, oh, like, I already thought he thought that.
Like, no. Well, it's just like, who cares what he thinks about anything? Like if he tells me his favorite like drink is Pepsi, I'm drinking Coke. Like this is a very weird person.
Right. Right.
But like for further context, like he, while this film was coming out, D'Amato had sued his mother-in-law for, quote, defamation because of the thing she says in the phone call that's in the first in the documentary, where she implies like, oh, maybe I'm scared of him. He's like sick. Like maybe I don't know if he's gay or not or whatever. And it's just like there's this this underlying thing of like it's not just control. Like he's almost like trying to prove something. Like why would you even associate with a homosexual like him? Like,
yeah,
it's, and it's weird. Just like, there's this like insecurity to him that's so like palpable. Like he is so like he's still that boy who's stuffed in a locker, which literally happened to like to him apparently according to his mother-in-law, where he's trying to get back at everyone else and control everything and just like prove something to I don't know himself, where he's just like, oh, there's nothing weird about this. I just like these videos. And I also like controlling people and ruining their lives, and I'm showing up to this film screening and threatening to sue everyone like a normal person would, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like what he's saying and what he's doing just don't match so much that it's mesmerizing. Like every time D'Amato's on screen, he's a star. Like I just could not take my eyes off this guy who is just like casual, like you said, casually eating popcorn and being like, you should lawyer up while watching their documentary.
Did you find it strange, or did you find it enjoyable to watch the people in the background as they're watching that final confrontation outside the theater? I mean, their eyes were just like just totally like shocked, like I can't believe it.
This is a top 10 theater saying. Experience for sure. Yeah. You know,
that was so funny.
It's Portal scene, Endgame, Shadow the Hedgehog, and this is number 3, you know.
Yeah.
Just like the time the guy in the movie showed up in real life.
Insert Twitter scene where I wish streaming services would have a button so I could have audience reactions.
I wanted the button where I can have D'Amato come into my living room and threaten to sue me every time I watch something.
I just wanted D'Amato simulator because it adds some more spice to my life. I can't wait to hear what wacky
You're watching Portrait of a Lady on Fire and you're just like, this isn't good. There's nothing good about this. Like,
that's right.
Yeah. I'm gonna sue you. I don't know why my D'Amato became a Nick Cage impression.
I wish he had Twitter. It would be so great. But
the final twist
is 6 months after the Tickle King, he died. And so that's it, you know? I mean, there really isn't much else after that, right?
It's bizarrely kind of the perfect ending where just the mystery will never be solved. He had multiple health problems. He had some sort of cardiac event. He also had suffer from obesity and diabetes. And I don't know if he had something else, but the official listing is cardiac event. And the, what is it called? The Jane something. I'm bad with names. What's the name of the company?
Jane O'Brien.
Yeah. It's already being run by somebody else, who was an associate of D'Amato's during the making of the documentary. He swore up and down. He had nothing to do with D'Amato, but now that D'Amato has passed away, he's very much more open about it. He even had a conversation with Furrier afterwards, and he has all the videos. He has the entire library, and it's interesting because he does give some insight into D'Amato's like psyche, like where he was talking about like they have projects they shelved because they just weren't to D'Amato's liking for whatever reason, and now these videos are purchasable. He's just making a profit off of them, which again, morally questionable because right. All the people involved weren't even clear on the fact that they're being put on the internet, let alone being sold on like DVDs, or I don't even know how they're being sold, but the company continues to exist. And so it's, in some ways, this is an ongoing story. This was a snapshot of this period of this company's existence and the person who created it, but it continues to live on, which is kind of what this whole thing is, part of the experience of a doc, I think, where it isn't just the documentary. There's this whole story around it where the documentary is part of the story. There's a whole follow-up just about the release of the documentary. And even now there's this further developments where D'Amato passed away and the people who made the Tickle documentary were very clear. They'd be respectful. And because I think they knew that his death could potentially become a spectacle unto itself because of the doc. So they're like, you know, please don't contact his family. Please don't try and do anything. We are very sad he's passing. And they were very nice about it. They were like, you know what? D'Amato is a part of our life. Like, he is inextricably like connected to us now. And there's something we miss him. We're sad to see him go, you know, because I think they wanted him to face some sort of punishment for his crimes. But also, I think there's still that mystery of like, they just wanted to understand this guy.
Right.
And I don't think they ever will now, you know.
Want some quick updates on the podcast? Follow the Cinematic Doctrine Instagram for cool posts and story updates. Press the link in the show notes or search Cinematic Doctrine, that's one word, in your Instagram app. Oh, and we're on Threads. Check us out there too.
So, all in all, worthwhile. I'm glad you finally watched Tickled after I kept
it's
talking
good.
About it.
Yeah, the whole experience, like the documentary on its own is a good documentary. My feelings on it are improved by the follow-up, the short 22-minute follow-up. I think for me, it's a more, just because I just like to know. So like I get getting more of the picture, getting more D'Amato content was nice. just enigmatic figure who will go down in mystery forever. It's fascinating. And it's, the fact is, like, for me, like, it's, there's a million other things like this out there, right? So like there's this whole, the internet has opened up this whole sea underbelly of all of these markets and worlds and content that caters to groups that you don't even know exist in the first place.
For instance, do you want to know why in the movie Bombshell, that Fox News one, they were able to get the behind the scene offices so well portrayed that even people who worked at Fox, which that floor is extremely secure. Well, there's, I don't even think you could take photos in there. People who worked there were surprised at the setup. And when the set designer was interviewed about how he figured out, he goes, "Oh, we based the design off of."
Oh my gosh, I know you're talking.
You know, yeah. It. Yeah. We based the designs off of a website that features Fox News host feet pics. And that's how we were able to figure out the floor plan for the Fox News office floor.
So weird. I'm not here to like, to speak very briefly on
feet and feet picture culture.
Well, just fetishes in general. It's like
support on Patreon for feet pics. yeah, Melvin says he would definitely do feet pics for no money.
You have no choice. Here they come.
Oh, I love the Lord of the Rings. The hobbits never wear shoes.
So every time there's all these photos of like people on Quentin Tarantino starring the Hollywood Walk of Fame, just stepping on it. You know, you see those.
When you learn that he's got a foot thing for the first time, that which of course is like that's like
I think it's unavoidable at certain points. Filmography, you can't watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and not come away
there's
with that
so
opinion.
Many
it's not
wild.
My thing. I'm not to be unnecessarily mean to anyone out there, but gross. Anyway, yeah, so like, I'm sure we'll get asked about this, but like, I don't think there's anything inherently sinful in theory about any sort of fetish. However, I think it's very easy for it to override and change the God-designed concept of sexuality as it's supposed to exist, where it's a loving union between a man and woman within the context of marriage, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You've all heard this stuff before. So I think there is potential where like it becomes a thing where it like overrides your love for the person.
Totally.
Where like there's that semi-famous story of like a man and a woman were having trouble being intimate. And so the psychologist, because the man had foot fetish, suggested he nail a shoe to the wall above the headboard so he'd stare at it. And it's just like, people think that's like a funny story, but I'm like, that guy like basically isn't even attracted to his wife, right? Like at a certain point.
Right.
I think
and that's
that can,
not
like,
good. Yeah.
To put it mildly, that is not good. And so like, and then even outside of that, I think it's very obvious that fetishes have spiraled into its own like, you know, cottage industry where all pornography is sex outside of the context that God designed it for. In case anyone was worried about at least my stance on some of these things after we guffawed and giggled throughout, tickled, but
I would believe we're in agreement. Because there is a sense that
not that I'm here to borrow a phrase, I'm not here to yuck anyone's yum, but you know,
but you are weird if you like to. but
I mean, weird by some definition, sure.
Well, yeah. So within the confines of a marriage unit, man and women are allowed to explore what they enjoy and what they don't enjoy. Yeah. And yes, that's the preservation of each other, the exploration and the satisfaction of each other towards each other can include many things. And that is for you to explore together, especially when you understand the concept of marriage and being representative of Christ in the church and the wholeness of God's creation and us as people. The idea that when I'm living in God's goodness and I'm able to do good because there's no law for what's good, that means you can do anything. And that comes down to preference and interests and God-given and God-created passions. But just like how you can become a workaholic, despite what work you might be, you could have the same thing happen in sexuality where your focus is transitioned away from what's intended to something else. And so, 100%, that's totally possible. And but that's going to also happen regardless of whether you have a particular slant or interest in your sexuality or if you're just a vanilla missionary-only kind of guy, because now you're only worshiping missionary position as the only form of sexuality. And so, it's not – it's almost like these things are complicated, and because of sin, everything gets a little more difficult. But
yeah, my marriage and the family teacher when I went to Bible college, his whole stance was the marriage bed is sacred. Whatever you guys are doing in there, it's fine. The only caveat is like obviously the body's a temple. So, for example, if you really like punching someone in the face, like
that's horrible. Yeah,
maybe don't you like it, but it's not. You know, taking care of your spouse, you know, that is not loving your spouse.
Correct.
So obviously like whatever he's like, that's fine. As long as it's not, defiling the person's body in any way.
You're a mimage bearer. You have value, stuff like that.
So on and so forth. So Melvin, if you want your wife to tickle you, that's totally fine. I'm not going to judge you or whatever. I don't think there's anything simple about doing something that could be seen as odd, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm trying to think of an example. I wouldn't be gross, but, I don't know. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with wearing costumes, for example. Maybe actually, no, I'm second guessing myself, because if you're indulging in an attraction to something other than your spouse, I think that's questionable. I'll get back to you on that. In the middle of a random other episode, we'll be
definitely
talking about
Obi-Wan
or something. I'll be like, anyway, so here's how I feel about wearing costumes. And if you guys want to dress up like Obi-Wan, I guess, I don't know.
What a bad show. I did not like that at all. Look forward to that episode whenever, if we choose to even do it. The texts that I said, Nan, are really funny. I hope we read those on the episode.
I sure do crack myself up, says Melvin.
My letterbox review, I like wrote part of it and I go, oh man, I'm being really mean. And I read it to Catherine. She's like, oof. Yeah, I did not like that show at all. But yeah, Tickled. Check it out. It is good. I think it's,
there's a part of every person that when you're about to hear, see something weird, there's like a thought in your back of your head. You're just like, oh no, what if I like this? You know what I mean? There's
like what if it's Tickled?
What if this awakens something in me? And then like 2 minutes in, I'm like, oh no, that's not a concern. This is very odd. And I was like very like weirded out by it very quickly. And I was like, that's kind of nice that apparently like I'm relatively normal in that regard.
Your barometer is still working. So
yeah,
pretty good.
I'm like, all right, I'm maybe okay. Because it's a part of like, ugh. It's like it's that Jim Rash thing from Community. This better not awaken anything in me. Have no fear. I found it to be so off-putting in parts that I was like, ugh. I mean, I guess if it apparently there's a whole market for it, but not for me, not for Dan. But anyway, you're recommending the show?
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's well put together. It's funny. It's incredibly funny. It's incredibly enjoyable. It's challenging. It's uncomfortable. It is the full gamut of emotional experience, and it's just really great. I think, like I've said before, when you've seen an obscenely large amount of movies, you're kind of just pining for something new and different. And this is that. So I can't recommend it enough, and I'll continue to recommend it till the day I die. So it is really good. I stand for Tickling. So there we go.
You may not know this, but the easiest way you can show your support for Cinematic Doctrine is to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen. So press pause and share your thoughts. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And then press play again so you can hear the rest of the show.
What recommendations do you have for us today?
So thinking about documentaries, I'm going to recommend one that's kind of on the other end of spectrum. While Tickled, as it develops, you become, I guess, more weirded out. Like it becomes darker as it goes along in a lot of ways. I'm going to recommend something that's kind of in the other direction, but will be of interest to movie people for sure. I'm going to recommend a documentary called The Wolf Pack. Have you ever seen this?
Is this the one where they're a bunch of kids who like are living in this apartment? They only go outside like 6 times a year.
Yes. Yeah.
This was also recommended by YMS, and I've been meaning to check it out. In that same video, he recommended a documentary called Welcome to Leith, which is pretty good. And I'm debating on that as my reco or something else. But continue, Wolfpack.
What you just said is, I think, all the information you need. It's someone who is like a documentarian or a journalist, one of the two, just stumbled across these kids and then decided to do a documentary on them. So very just kind of happenstance. It's really interesting. It's a character piece in the sense that you just learn about these kids and their life, and there's things about it that will be particularly of interest to movie fans. I really enjoyed it. It's recommended to me by one of my coworkers a few years ago, and she has great taste. I need to ask her for a recommendation soon, but it's right there on Netflix. It's a relatively quick watch, all things considered. I really like it. I really enjoy it. Tickled leaves you kind of not feeling good at the end in some ways. It's though very interesting. The Wolf Pack is kind of the opposite. It leaves you with a really good feeling at the end. So I recommend The Wolf Pack.
And I am going to, I was going to recommend Catfish, but I feel like I've recommended that on the podcast today, or not today, just in general. I think I've recommended that as a thing. I couldn't find out if I did. So I'll kind of recommend two, but I'm only going to list one in the bottom. Catfish is a documentary about catfishing, and it's about one particular guy who gets catfished, kind of learns that he's being catfished, and then for the documentary is exploring that experience and then going to find where the person is. And it is, it's good. It's a good, like, talking
about...
It launched the TV show, if you know about it, on MTV. And I've heard it described, the MTV show, as a trash watch. If you just want to watch something trashy, watch Catfish. Mostly just because the concept of catfishing and all of it is, it's a sad thing. And so it's trash TV. But the documentary, and I can't speak to the show because I haven't watched it, but the documentary is very human. It's very soft and gentle. It's emotional. It's incredibly sad, but without being the kind that leaves you going away like depressed, like a movie like Come and See, which will just make you depressed and sad. But Catfish is more, it has that interesting documentary through line that's really good. One scene is very weird where they just read the sex that they've been sending each other, which was just bizarre. So I don't know why they did that, but also that is a big thing about catfishing. So I guess I get why they kept it in. So that is a soft reco, but I'm actually going to recommend the other one, Welcome to Leith, which was also recommended by YMS. I'm just going to read the description here and then I'll expand on it, but it is, in September 2012, the tiny prairie town of Leith, North Dakota, sees its population of 24 grow by one. As the new residents' behavior becomes more threatening, tensions soar, and residents desperately look for ways to expel this unwanted neighbor. And the one neighbor is an alt-right guy who moves into the area with the intent to have more of his neo-Nazi friends move into the area to co-opt the community and basically turn it into an alt-right neo-Nazi town, because they can just vote people in, and it's sort of just that is what it is. It is strange, and it is again these documentaries that are just a real thing in real life that happened, and it's really compelling. It's interesting, at times funny, because it's so absurd and just strange, and so I definitely recommend that. It was on Netflix for a time, but it's not now. I guess you have to get it off Amazon. I think you can stream it off Amazon. I guess I'll double check right now and let you know. Yeah, you're going to have to rent it. It is on Prime Video, but it is very good. It is not on Vudu, which I thought was strange, but yes, it is just a good time. It's great. And I guess you could say, like, this came out in 2015, pre-Trump, but definitely in line with that. That might immediately upset some people that I'm making that connection right there, but come on, right? Like, come on. So, yeah, it is a trip. Definitely recommended. And like, yeah, if you're someone who likes to chase fascinating documentaries, then continue this ride with me and check out Welcome to Leith. And like I said, soft reco on Catfish. But what else do you have, Dan? Did you just not have like a Christian thingy that you wanted to go for, or you just wanted to do it at the end?
No, I did it out of order. I realized after I said it, I did it out of order.
It's okay.
Oh, silly me. I'm going to recommend a book I've been using to grab it here to help me, because I'm doing some VBS stuff. And I recommend a book. It's a little older than some of the things I've recommended here on the show, but I think it's still good. It's called The Drama of Scripture. It's by Greg G. Bartholomew and Michael W. Going. It is basically trying to like help you understand the general narrative that goes through Scripture. Not in the kind of like the kitschy light way that some people do, where they just talk about like, oh, isn't the story of Daniel pretty dramatic? But more like the actual like the thrust of Scripture, where it's like the redemption of man, Christ, and like how God preserves people and all this great stuff. And it helps in a very orthodox, theologically sound way, helps you really dig into the amazing story that is the Bible. So very helpful for those who do preaching or lead small groups. It also just like really helps bring and illuminate some things to light. So it also is just one of those things that I'm noticing is like very accessible to a large audience. When you look at the people who have utilized it, you get everyone from Gordon G. Wenham and Tremper Longman to N.T. Wright to yada, yada, yada. So also my copy has a nice dedication page written to the person who read the book before me. So I guess that doesn't really apply to anyone else but me, but that's really nice. So The Drama of Scripture.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Cinematic Doctrine. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review and subscribing to the podcast. And as mentioned before, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you're opted into a once-a-month movie poll where you decide a movie we discuss on the podcast. There are other unique benefits that come with supporting the podcast, so be sure to check that out at patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. A special shout out to those who support at the Art House Theater tier on Patreon. Thank you so much, Mom, Dad, Melanie, Charlion, and Thomas. You guys are the best, and your continued monetary support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, stay cool. Want some Cinematic Doctrine swag? You're in luck. We've got 3-inch Cinematic Doctrine logo stickers exclusive for Patreon supporters. Perfect for your travel mug or laptop. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine, link in the show notes, and choose the independent theater tier. Doing so will net you other perks too. But let's be real, the podcast stickers are the coolest perk. So get yourself some podcast stickers by supporting on Patreon.